Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Bjornis rental you've chartered is great, right up there with Glud and Fad's holiday boatels. A huge pontoon with plenty of room for casting 360 degrees. And look at the power hooked onto the transom. Is that a 300 horse outboard?
Fud, that's not just a 300 horse. That's the new Otscat Water 300 horsepower Galleymaster. Otscat Water's newest four-stroke offering.
A great motor for those who spend the whole day on the big lakes like Mille Lacs or Lake of the Woods. Quiet, powerful, 700 hours running time before its first servicing. Outstanding.
You bet, Fud. But have you noticed anything else about the Galleymaster?
My goodness, Bjorn. What is that incredible aroma?
You know how some of our buddies cook foil-wrapped meals on the engines of their snow machines? Boaters who run inboards can do the same thing. Put reasonable amounts of your favorite hot foods in a triple wrap of foil and place it on the inboard. Boat for hours, then voila! Dinner time. Hot food right off the engine.
But Bjorn, this is an outboard.
Right you are, Fudd. But this is the Otscatwater Galleymaster. Notice anything about the housing?
I did think the cowling on this outboard seemed a little large. And what's with the handle on the front? Is that a small door?
You might call it an oven door, Fudd. The Galleymaster has been built with enough room in the front of the cowling to take a moderately sized entree or three, as long as they're triple wrapped in foil. If you're ready to reel in for a while, Fudd, we each have our own half rack of ribs and a Hasselback potato. I've even warmed some extra sauce for us.
What won't those Otscatwater engineers think of next? Bjorn, that's good eating.
And good boating, Fudd. Pass the napkins, please.
Folks, do yourselves a favor. If you're a boater with a taste for speed as well as a taste for good food, the Otscatwater is the outboard for you. 300 horsepower and room enough in the cowling to prepare a hot meal for five. What more could you ask for? No need to come in when the bite is on, regardless of who's doing the biting. The Otscatwater Galleymaster 300, now available at all of your favorite boating shops and marinas. With the Galleymaster, you really can fuel up and get cooking. From the glow of St. Paul's number one, welcome to another edition of Cabin Country. Give us the time and we'll take you out of the traffic and away from the levee. Let's find the place where the loons call out among the moonlit waves, where the wind sighs among the Norway pines. Pull up a dock chair, have a sip of your coffee, and get a line in the water. This is Cabin Country. Now here's Bjorn Lloydsted, and I'm Fudd Klugman with another woodland escape.
Well, we are joined here by Twin Cities music legend, you know, John Munson, in the shadows of greatness here. Your history, the music, it's still going on. This is not a past tense kind of situation. You're more, I would say, active now and creative now than ever. And knowing that history, it only makes sense that we ask you about this sauna you're building in your backyard. Tell us all about your sauna.
A sauna?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's a great, COVID is a, it sucks.
Yes.
And it's been terrible for musicians in so many ways, but
right.
I don't know if you guys follow Jeremy Messersmith on Twitter.
Yeah.
He's like been very busy baking cookies.
Yeah.
You see other people up to various thises and thats. And I've always wanted to have my own private sauna in my yard.
Right.
And this was the year.
This is it.
You know, late March, I got the lumber and I started building it out. never have done a project like that before, but it's been awesome, and I'm nearly done. I've actually stoked the fire three times now. I'm kind of burning the paint off the stove. I got a stove up in Tower, Minnesota from Lampa Stoveworks, which is this Finnish outfit up there. Yeah. And it's a sweet little about six by eight sauna room, little hot room. And my family's super excited about it too. So we're going to be spending the winter baking our butts off. In
Absolutely.
There.
Absolutely. Are you going to have a cold water plunge pool outside, John? Are you...
Unfortunately, you know, I mean, you know how Minnesota is. It's like, how long are you going to be able to keep that thing open?
Right.
I thought about getting a horse trough or something like that. And then like figuring out a way to keep it open with some kind of electric rod or something. Sure. I know they have something like that out in the mountains sometimes, you know, they'll have some arrangement like that, but I haven't got that figured out yet. I guess for now we're just going to get hot. We'll wait on the getting cold.
Maybe there's always snow angels. Yeah, snow angels in the yard.
You know, people talk about that thing of going in the sauna and then rolling around in the snow. Have you ever done it?
I have.
I
well, it was hot tub and then rolling around.
I did the wood burner at Dinard and then into frozen Burnside Lake.
Going in through a hole in the ice is one thing, and I'll do that anytime. But to me, you roll around in the snow. That snow is sharp. It hurts. It is not nice. I don't like that. I'm not into pain. Not why I do saunas.
Death by a thousand cuts.
You realize those things really are crystals.
Right.
And the colder it gets, the harder they are. Yeah. So it's a wood burner then. You've got
it's a wood burning sauna. It's just a little building kind of out in the side yard at my house, and it's remote from the house, and it's awesome. It's totally a dream come true. It really is. That was the first COVID project I got underway, and the other big COVID project for me was the box of Trip Shakespeare tapes. It had been staring at me from the bookshelf for like 30 years. Yeah. Literally all these live tapes. And a friend of mine was like, you know, you got to get those things archived. Put them up on archive.org. And I started that process. And then my buddy Morgan Taylor said, dude, you can't take those things and just toss them into a dark, dingy corner of the internet. We have to create a shrine. And so he built out this whole website called tripshakespeare.net, and it features, new interviews with the band, a bunch of old live material, and a bunch of videotape that I did not even know existed. We kind of put a call out to people to send us, home video style recordings they'd made of us performing back in the 80s and early 90s. And actually a fair bit of stuff showed up. It was kind of a different time, you know. It's not like everybody had a phone making recordings of their favorite show or whatever. It's like you actually had to have a camera.
They got a real camera. They got a little weird at club door entries as you came up with a video camera. They'd be like, wait a minute, what's this all about, man? Have you talked to the band? What are you doing?
Take it away and throw it in the trash.
That's right. Well, I swore I wasn't going to go down this road, and I'm really not, but I will tell you that tripshakespeare.net is going to be all the rage with a lot of my college buddies who followed you all around the upper Midwest. You know, you had, and I'm sure you're aware, you had your trippers that just followed you around.
Oh, it was so fun. It was a very fun time.
Yeah. Oh, man. The woman I married was part of that force, you know, like, oh, yeah, man, every time they were in the... I didn't cross state lines like a lot of the other guys did, but... That was a date that went on the calendar every show that could be made. So that's cool to hear, and what a great body of work. Well, the sauna, outstanding. I gotta ask. So when, John, did you start realizing as a young man, perhaps even before your garage punk days, I really like being outside with my family? This is when did the John Munson experience as an outdoorsy kind of person start?
I played outdoors a lot when I was a little boy, and I loved building snow forts and I loved when the, you know, when the melt would happen in the early spring. I loved, we lived on a really steep hill, and so I loved building dams of the water that would come streaming down the gutters. Yeah. You know, we'd build these dams out of snow and stuff like that. I loved sledding and stuff like that. We had a really steep hill across the street. And my birthday is December 13th, in case you guys want to get me something nice. Oh,
we'll have to
on a really
hey,
good
I'm the 17th,
birthday.
So we're both Sagittarius, right? Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Well, then maybe you can relate to this story, because if it was a really good year, there would be enough snow in the park across the street so that my birthday party would be a sledding party. And then I've got photos of myself with my dad and my sister and my brother and my mom up at Camp de Nord when I was probably 3 years old, which was very early on in the camp's existence. And, you know, the outdoors is just, it presents an adventure, you know. There's an adventure around every corner. There's like critters that you can capture and interact with, you know. I mean, up at Camp de Nord at that time, there were tons of turtles, and also frogs, and you would have turtle races and frog races and stuff like that. It seems kind of cruel in a way now when I think back about it, but there were so many of them. It was irresistible, you know. You just go down to the creek and you could, you know, collect various stuff. And then also at de Nord at that time, you'd take your trash and you'd take it to the dump out across the road.
Yes.
And the bears would come down the hill and they would eat the trash.
Yep.
And there'd be there'd be families of bears there, and you could walk up there and watch them in the trash. Right. It's like they were no more than 50 feet away. And I remember being a 5 year old with my sister, no mom, no dad, no adult anywhere, watching the bears eating the trash, and having a Bruin mock charge me.
Oh boy.
Yes, and have you ever had the experience of a bear mock charging you? You don't know that it's mock charging you,
right?
Especially if you're five. And they make a sound, they growl, and they clack their jaws together, and a lot of foam is coming out of their mouth, and they make themselves large, and they kind of rush at you. And I turned and I ran smack dab into an iron post holding the gate on that garbage dump, and knocked myself practically clean out. I knocked myself to the ground.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And the bear, of course, just went back to its business. It's like, this one's too dumb to even bother with.
By default, John, you had done what they tell you to do, either go prone or get huge and start banging pots and pans on your sister.
How does
a
5-year old get big, though?
You can't.
Scare the bear back. You know.
Right into an iron piling. Oh my goodness gracious.
Have you ever had any encounters with bears up there?
You know, the funny thing is, my daughter and lovely wife and I went to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan this summer, because it was just, we're fighting that COVID thing. You know, what are we going to do? And there was trips out to colleges, and none of these things happened. It just wasn't safe. So we decided, it's just us, and we'll camp and we'll drive up to the UP. It was the first time I've ever seen a bear in the wild. And
was that right?
And it wasn't nearly as exciting as yours, John. I mean, we were driving through one of the last small towns in Wisconsin, a post office, a quick trip, and about 19 bars. And this adult black bear was just running down Main Street like, I'll try the next bar. This one's close. Right. I don't know. You know, and I was like, my God, Liv, I think it's a bear. She's like, Dad, it's a bear. I just said that. You know, it was unbelievable. And then we ran over a turtle. So it was kind of a 2-for-1. I felt awful about the turtle. And then I was like, but I just saw a bear. Yeah, no, I've never seen, I've seen lots of love notes from bears. Dune orders like yourself and I will know the great crossing of the goat path as you kind of cross from the main camp over towards Pine Point, and there's a private driveway that you try to get across as quickly as you can, but then you're back on the path to head over to Pine Point. And there was a summer where it was just constantly a pile of bear scat right there, like right in the middle of the path, kind of like you think you're getting away from me, but I'm here, you know. And yeah, one of my colleagues who's a lifer at Dunord 2 said, yeah, it's either an adult, you know, sow or Bruin, or the most antisocial camper we've ever met. I'm not sure which, but one of the two. And I'm hoping it was the former, you know, but yeah. Hey, whatever. No, I have not. So I know Joe, the wolf man who's up there.
Yeah, Seliga.
Yeah, I think that's right. And he would take people out to watch wolves.
Here they are.
And I think they had a few interactions with bears too, where it was like, well, if we just stay here, stay quiet and at night, you know. And they would have the wolves come up very close to them. He'd even talk to them back and forth. He was good at doing wolf sounds.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And they would get within 10, 15 feet and kind of look around and then move off. And he'd just say, everybody be cool, you know. It'll be fine.
Seeing a wolf in the wild, that's darn rare. I've had that encounter a couple of times, too. Yeah. But it's always like a, whoa, did you see that? You know what I mean? It's like it's almost like it's a shadow.
Yeah, you know? It's almost like a spiritual event, kind of like, my gosh, we came close to, you know, something we're not supposed to see, you know.
Yeah.
They're seen really if they want to be seen, and usually
it
they don't want to be
like
seen.
It seems like they're coming back, though, now. I mean, I know they're talking about taking them off the endangered species list, or taking off protections for them.
Right. And were these encounters, John, bears, wolves, is this all Dunord? Is this, or are these different?
No. I've had encounters with bears where it was unplanned also.
Okay.
And also, like I said, with the wolves, it was always you'd see one crossing the trail out in front of you at 100 feet or something like that.
Fleeting moment.
If you're portaging sometimes, you know, and then you hear them, of course, which is always a thrill. I guess Dunord began my interest in really wilderness camping. And I did do some camping when I was in high school, but then I really got more interested in it about the time I was in college and just after college. And then I started to want to go on trips by myself.
Sure.
And I would go with a couple of buddies and make those kinds of buddy trips, you know, just tenting out and camping out and portaging around a little bit, doing some nice trips. But the most intense trips that I think I've done, where I've gone the farthest and spent the longest periods of time out on the trail, have been with my wife.
Okay.
And we've done some really nice long swings through the Boundary Waters.
Okay. Yeah. So it sounds like that's kind of your focus, is the Boundary Waters area.
Yeah, it totally is. I mean, I just can't get up there enough.
Right.
I like going to other places too. I like the mountains. I don't necessarily feel that comfortable. Grizzly bears I find terrifying.
Yeah.
Black bears, reason. It's not like I'm comfortable with them, you know, but grizzly bears will pick you up and shake you.
Throw you around. Man. Yeah. What do you got? Like the guy who wants the change out of your pocket, turn you upside down and shake you.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're lucky,
so,
that's where it stops.
I want to go other places, but just it's, there's so much of that North Country that I haven't yet seen, and I just love it up. I just love it up there so much.
And it just goes on and on and on. It's amazing, and I love the fact that it's been so well protected, so well preserved. We were up there one summer when they did a controlled burn, and that was several years ago now. And you felt kind of bad about it, but they were very clear that, like, you know, there's so much standing balsam fir out in these woods that has just come up, and they're beautiful trees and they smell so nice and everybody loves them around the holiday season. But people were saying it really is almost like nature's napalm. I mean, a lightning strike on some dry juniper or balsam fir and everything's going up. So they, you know, just getting that understory kind of back in check, and they were watching it very closely, the DNR, everything. And But it was weird. I was in a kayak out on the north arm end of Burnside watching everything burn, you know, and there's just leaves floating down, excuse me, burning, and paddling along, and oh, there's a chickadee that didn't quite like the smoke, and there's you know, bugs and birds and all this stuff. And I thought, uh-oh, I guess this is a negative side effect, but it's got to be done. And then you'd go up for several years, and it's funny, the road leading into camp, you can see now, you know, all the way to the top of the rock ridges and everything. It was a good thing to do, but at the time, it was really strange. I was just like, I know this is under control, but it just feels wrong. But, you know, it's such a beautiful area.
There's the under control things, and then there's the out of control things, like those, the blowdowns that they're having up there now. It's right. Really pretty terrifying. One of the first big trips my wife and I did was after that first big blowdown. Remember, that was over right around the 4th of July? And
yep,
maybe,
yep.
I don't know, was it 99 or 2000, something like that? God. We went in before. We knew that there had been a storm.
Right.
And nobody really knew quite how bad it was. We had heard that it was bad. And we actually saw a canoe at an outfitter that had come in that was just shattered. It was completely broken in half, pretty much.
Right.
And the guy said, well, there's been some trees down and stuff up there in the area where you're going into, so just be careful.
Right.
And then when we went in up that trail, up the kind of the Temperance flowage up towards Cherokee and some of those lakes around there, and it had been blown up. You could barely get through the trails. The trails were complete. There were trees crisscrossing across the portages.
Oh, wow.
And my wife had not done these trips much at that time, and she was like, whoa, this is really much more intense than
I realized. I don't know, like, if I signed up for this, John.
It's not always like this. It's not quite this bad. But we kind of bored through it. And the one thing that was amazing about it is there was just nobody there. There was nobody there to speak of, even on these very popular routes that we were on. And it was cool, but in some places it was really spooky.
Yeah.
Because you would see a campsite that had just been devastated with huge trees down all over it. Right. And you could tell that this was violence that had actually happened to people.
Yeah.
You know, you could feel that it had happened to somebody. You know,
if they lived through it, they had some incredible stories to tell, and ideally they all.
Oh man, I don't want to tell those stories.
Oh man,
I would never. I get just so scared in my tent when there's a huge electrical storm breaking in the middle of the night. You know, it's just like, wow, this one is not skirting us. This is going to happen right now.
My daughter's friend was out on two different Widgie trips that were canoe shots into the BWCA. Kind of early in the Widgie experience, you do some canoe trips, and both of them, major electrical storms. And at one point, they were, you know, get up, get out of the tents, and get under the canoes, and a tree came down on them. That second one, she was, I think I'm cured. I'm going to do backpacking trips in the mountains now. This is for real. I mean, this is, and there's nowhere to go. I mean, if you're out there.
I will say this, the one lesson from that experience of going up after that big blowdown.
Yeah.
I do look for a place of refuge now.
Yeah.
When I go to a campsite, and there frequently is a hiding place. You can find a place kind of cozied up next to a ridge.
Sure.
Where if even if the trees did start coming down, you'd be protected.
You're going
to
be okay.
It's weird to think like that, but especially if you're traveling with your family, you know what I mean? It's like good to have like an idea about if the kids get freaked out, where are we going to go? What are we going to do?
Right. And it's going to be okay, and they can see that. I mean, it's that voice of cabin country experience, John. You've learned the very critical things to keep kids happy, and that's, especially when they're young, that's pretty much the trip. It's like, are they okay? You know, are they worried about what we're doing? Are they happy? You know,
right.
And safety. Then you counter that with Northern Lights and the starscape and just the beautiful water and everything. It's just amazing. Well, that kind of leads me into another question. You know, you as an outdoors type person, Are you more a canoer, a kayaker? Are you the kind of person who's like, to heck with that, let's get the skis out behind a power boat? Are you big into fishing?
I like all the different kinds of things to do up north, actually. I guess I've kind of given up on water skiing. You got to have a certain kind of boat to pull me out of the water. I don't know enough guys. I've got this buddy who's over in Chautauqua on Lake Chautauqua, and he's like, you come over. I've got a ski boat that'll get you up. We'll be able to have some fun with that. So I might do that again. I really do love water skiing, actually.
Yeah.
But I think that primarily I'm a canoe camper. I like to canoe and portage. Yeah. And then I really love fishing. Mm-hmm. Every spring for the last, I don't know, 15 years probably, I do a early spring lake trout trip.
Oh, nice.
Go into some of the lakes up the Gunflint.
Okay.
And there's a lot of nice lake trout lakes up there. And if you get in, you guys probably know this, but if you get in early enough, lake trout, which normally are very much a deep water fish,
right.
are in very shallow water because the lake hasn't turned over yet.
Okay.
So the cold water is on top, and so are the lake trout. Okay. And they're super sensitive to temperature. And so you can fly fish for them, usually we're just casting spoons, but you're catching them like 5 feet of water, and they're great fighting fish, especially if you get into a wild population of them.
Right.
And they're also great eating fish. I think people think of lake trout as very fatty and kind of not as flavorful as walleye or something like that, but if you get into these wild lake trout populations, they're not fatty. They're just awesome. They're just amazing fish to eat.
Well,
and they're really fun to catch.
Yeah, perfect cabin country question. I mean, what's your trophy lunker on lake trout, John? What was the big kahuna that you pulled up?
These are not huge fish. They're probably the biggest one I ever caught was no more than 10 pounds.
That's still a pretty good fish. Yeah, it's an impressive fish. From the stuff I've pulled out of the Gull River, you're doing well. I mean,
right.
Yeah,
I've never caught anything 10 pounds out of Gull River.
Yeah, very fun fish to catch.
And fighters, you know,
you can catch, and it's always fun to go smallmouth fishing up there.
Right,
they're not a lot of size to them, for the most part, at least the ones I've caught. But man, they're such a great fighting fish. They're so fun to catch.
And that's the type of fish too that'll jump out of the water to let you know I'm on your line.
We
had an experience. One went skyward on me, and then promptly took an antique jitterbug lure and snapped my line and took off with it. And I thought, do I dive in now? Do I just dive in? Yeah. Oh, it was grandpa's lure. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Fudd was sitting in the ranger boat going, I don't know, man, maybe you shouldn't have been using an antique. And I thought, I just got to know if I jump in. Do I grab
it was Bjorn Jr.'s rod, I think.
From
15 years ago. Pulled it out of the closet.
The test on it was mighty old. It was not my better moments, but,
I got a fish story for you, though, if you want to hear a story about a lunker.
Yes.
Because a lake trout, they do get big, not in the bodies of water that I'm fishing on. I'm not in those giant lakes like Saginaw and stuff like that where I'm fishing for them. The smaller lakes up there. But my wife and I took a trip up to Lac La Croix a number of years back, and I think we're in the Enamoose River, kind of winding our way up, and I'm like, this looks like northern water here. It's kind of shallow, and I'm thinking they're probably out sunning themselves and this stuff. Yeah. I got like a little crankbait kind of rattler kind of thing I was throwing out and whipping around, and I got this giant freaking northern on the end of the thing.
Yeah.
And we had the canoe was full. We were going out for quite a number of days. So it was like the packs were all stacked up, and I wanted to go fishing, but I didn't want a big fat pain in the butt fish like this. I could tell it's like, this is going to be trouble. This is going to be trouble. I'm going to cut my hand or have the hook and the
you'll thrash and you'll get the hook. Like
And so I'm like fighting this guy in, and sure, he's getting in close to the boat and he's diving under the canoe, and I'm looking at him and I'm like, this is like freaking some old war horse. He's got scars all over his back and he's an old experienced fish, and he was pissed. He was pissed off. He was like, you are not catching me. And sure enough, he got up close to the boat. He made one more dive and he shook it. He shook the lure. Okay. And it was like, thank freaking God. And I reeled up the lure, and I'm kind of like run my hand through my hair, and the lure is hanging up at the level of my packs.
Yeah.
You know, so it's out of the water by a good foot and a half, 2 feet.
Yeah.
At the height of my packs. That fish went out, swam away from the canoe. It turned around and it struck at that lure.
Hanging on.
I'm telling you, this is no bullshit. It came fully out of the stream and struck at that lure.
Wow.
Hit it and hit the pack and then fell back into the stream. No bullshit. That happens. It was like Moby Dick coming back around. Unbelievable story, but true. I'm telling you, true.
Old man of Nina Moose tried to jump into your canoe as kind of a.
He tried to jump in. If the packs hadn't been there, that fish would have been in the bottom of the canoe.
He probably tried to take your right foot.
Yeah, he was mad. He must have been
just
mad
for that.
He was mad.
I'm going to get back at you. Fish,
he
drawing
hated,
a wake. Yeah, here comes the Nautilus. Look at that thing. My God, my God. You talked at one point about. Earlier conversation about studying music and musicology in Taiwan, and you said, well, I've got a story, but it's a little gross. Is it worthy of our time here, family friendly wise, or are we
family friendly? this story is actually it's actually not family friendly, but Taiwan is an amazing place. The story I was going to tell you is a little bit it's a little coarse. But I will tell you,
a little vulgar.
I went to I did go and visit some amazing places in Taiwan. Down outside of Taipei, I visited a very kind of local hot springs.
Okay,
where I was the only white guy there.
Sure,
and maybe the only white guy that had been there in quite a long time.
Okay,
and. It was an amazing experience because it was people in a very kind of casual, there's no fee for use or anything like this, but there were kind of boxes that were out there for people to use as lockers, very kind of casual locker room.
Sure.
So I went and I got into the hot tub of the hot spring. And all the Chinese guys got out. They all exited the water.
Okay.
And then I got out. And then they emptied that tub, which was huge. They drained it completely.
Yeah.
And refilled it while I was there.
Wow.
I mean, it was essentially a racist act.
Right.
You know,
right.
They considered me to be unclean.
Okay.
Wow.
But it was kind of fascinating to experience that. Because it was so open.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there was no reason for them to hide it. There was no shame about it. It was just like, you're dirty and you know, basically unwelcome.
Okay.
You know?
Did they speak to you at all, or was it just sort of a
really. They just kind of took care of this problem that I had gotten into the tub, you know, and was dirty because I was white, you know,
yeah,
sufficiently hygienic, you know.
Okay, well, it's ironic. I I just heard an old Who tune today, Odorono, off the Who sellout. You know, it ends with, her deodorant didn't work. She should have used Odorono. Maybe that's the problem, John. They're like, we can smell him coming. I don't know. This big white guy coming in here. He smells like a rock and roll star. We're going to have to get out of here.
They seem to have a drill. They had a drill. They knew what to do.
Yeah. But it was a fascinating. It was a fascinating experience, just the same. And it was, and you know, I mean, it was good for me to have had that experience. In some ways, because I think one of the things that I really noticed in Taiwan was, generally speaking, towards white people, extreme deference.
Okay.
Of like, you basically, whatever stupid idea I had was a great idea.
Yes.
Every idea that I had was awesome. And they were just trying to make it super easy and fun and nice for me.
Yeah.
But this was a generalized experience for white people in Taiwan is extreme deference.
Okay.
So this was like the this was another side of the other side of that coin, which was like, we're maybe deferential, but please get the hell out of here.
It shouldn't be in this hot tub. I don't know what you think you're doing getting in this hot. Yeah. I had a couple trips to Tokyo in my day, and in one of them we stayed for about a week, and I found the same thing. You know, I let them know I taught middle school, and I was immediately greeted by everybody as sensei, you know, and I was oh, yeah, well, I teach 8th grade middle school, sensei, and it was a big deal, and I was, everything I did, everything Martha did, it was just the coolest.
Well, I will say this, I will say this, that there's an abiding respect for education.
Right.
That I really appreciated.
Yeah.
And there's also an abiding respect for art and artists, and I was there as a visiting artist.
Yeah.
So, you know, that there was a real interest in what my ideas were.
Yeah.
You know, and that was kind of a different experience because, you know, generally speaking, at rock and rollers or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily aren't treated with that kind of that sort of respect, and certainly not in the U.S. I mean, in Europe, somewhat, but not in the U.S. for the most part.
Yeah. You should have given them a few bars, a two-wheeler, four-wheeler, and see how they responded to that one.
Yeah.
Check this out. This is exactly...
They'd have loved it.
I think you're right. I think you're right. Two-wheeler, four-wheeler, I could move the boxes. Four-wheeler, this seems like a good place to take a quick break, hear a couple of words from some of our sponsors, but we will return with more wonderful stories from John Munson.
Righto, and fill your coffee cup, and I don't know about you, but I'm kind of anxious to hear the finale of what happens with Officer Torgerson in his pursuit of Jack the Ripper.
Ah, yes.
So stay tuned, and we'll be right back. Find a job in the town of Doomland.
Mitt's Coffee has offered premium roasts of world-class coffee to the upper Midwest for years. And as cold weather changes the tint of the Northwoods, Mitt's offers you Laughing Goose Blend Dark Roast, a coffee that will shake the cobwebs loose and lift you into your day's events. Laughing Goose is the perfect mix of strength and taste, like the mighty bird that gave it its name. There is no problem or challenge you can't soar over after three or four mugs of Laughing Goose. The strong, rich flavor of a dark roast, with the smooth drinkability of a medium blend. Strong, hot, straight from the pot. What more could you ask for on a crisp autumn morning? And of course, Mitt's still offers its full range of coffee blends, including Morning Dove Early Morning Blend for those who need a milder start to the day, Yodeling Loon Espresso, our strongest blend for a potent cup, and Whistling Wood Duck Medium Roast for those who like to keep a full pot on all day long.
Laughing Goose is yet another of the flavorful coffees offered by Mitt's House of Fine Roasting. Mitt's Coffee, the brew that flew with the Great Northwest.
And now, the real adventures of the Cabin Country Outdoors Agency. Episode 4, Terror in the Channel.
My cell phone buzzed as I triple-checked the cylinder of my .357. I'd been accused in past situations of bringing a knife to a gunfight. This time I was bringing a howitzer. I checked the phone. Pete Ward. He told me he'd gotten out in the boat as soon as I'd left. He had a live well full of yellow bullheads that were feisty, alive, and ready for his live box. He even had one that was losing blood due to an embedded hook. Blood in the water. That would add to the lure for Jack the Ripper. I told Pete that after he'd filled his live box, his next job was to grab some weighted channel markers and head to the bend downriver from his place. This would serve as the start of what I was calling the crime scene. Pete would deter boaters from entering the scene. I'd called into the agency and asked that any free agent be dispatched to the Gull River in a small craft with more markers to prevent boaters from entering the area from the other side. Agent Mike Mac McKinney was available and ready to help. He texted back that he'd be near the railroad bridge. He'd have the markers set and a bullhorn with him in the John boat. He'd take the vessel that had a 20-horse Merc on the back, enough power to give somewhat of a pursuit if any pleasure boaters or anglers decided to run the blockade. If I had my way, this wouldn't take all that long. Pete's neighbors had all mentioned seeing the Ripper's head surface near docks and live boxes repeatedly over the last 48 hours. Jack had found a spot he liked. Pete's fresh haul of lively bullheads might be too much to resist. I sat in a lawn chair overseeing the dock and had to pull off my coffee. Pete had put the catch in the live box around 10 a.m. It was now around 3 p.m. Several mugs of coffee and several checks of the phone showed that the blockade crew was getting restless. Mac was fine. He was sitting tight and doing a bit of bass fishing while he turned the occasional boat around. Pete Ward was now less content. The texts kept coming. When can we call this? Nothing yet? No sign of Jack? I reassured him that agency work could take a while. A killer like Jack worked on his own schedule, not ours. Pete knew as much, but he was taking some flack from afternoon boaters. Apparently this 200-yard stretch of the Gull had become the most important now that boaters didn't have access to it. I began to realize that it had been 5 hours, and I was relying on some good-natured help from a volunteer. I texted Pete and told him to bring it in. Pull up the markers, head home. Captain wouldn't like this. We'd be on to day 2 of trying to stop the Ripper. It couldn't be helped. I heard the growl of Pete's 9-horse outboard as I saw the 16-foot make a wide sweep around the bend. Curiously enough, in the mid-afternoon shadows, I also saw a long, oblong shape that appeared to be causing a slight surface commotion. I knew that shape. That shape that was headed for Pete Ward's dock. A quick text to Pete caused the 16-foot fishing boat to slow to a stop. The shadow drew within 20 feet of the dock. A second quick text to Mac. The Ripper is here. No boats allowed. Keep them back. I slowly got to my feet and exhaled with purpose as I raised the .357. Focus. This required focus. Slow, rhythmic breathing. A large shadow slowly came near the live box. The bullheads inside knew what was up and began to thrash in the live box. I swear that turtle drew a slight wake as he came into the shallows. I gulped. I'd heard the stories, but there he was. The shell must have been 3 feet across. Massive. And hungry. I watched the mauler's beak begin to snap wires that seemed too thick to break. It was happening. Jack was a machine. He dismantled that side panel like a trained demolition worker. It was amazing. My cell buzzed again and I snapped out of my reverie. Shooting towards a river or a lake is basically forbidden. This was different. The water was clear of boats. No neighbors appeared on the opposite shore. I drew a bead on the shell near the neck. I slowly exhaled with purpose. With a final squint through my polarized lenses, I began to squeeze the trigger. The gun's report sounded like artillery as it broke the silence. There was a geyser-like spray, and I swear I heard a thud. I moved the sights slightly to the right, aiming now at the broad expanse of shell. Boom! Boom! Two rapid-fire shots to the body. I lowered the weapon and started running towards the dock steps. There was blood in the water. It wasn't from the live box. I began scanning the dock for an oar or a gaff hook, something I could use to haul Jack's body in and land it. A tremendous splash redirected my gaze. There was now a real wake as an oblong shadow seemed to wobble out of sight beneath the water. I raised my gun again as I heard Pete Ward's yell.
Got him, Torgy! 3 slugs from a pistol. No snapper can take that.
I tended to agree, but I couldn't produce a body. I understood refraction. I know my abilities with a pistol as tested at the range. I didn't miss the Ripper. He took 3 of my best. Took 3 and kicked off for lower depths. still alive, apparently. I shook my head in a mixture of disbelief and incredulous respect. He took a broadside, Pete, and then he went deep. This is a good-sized handgun. There aren't too many creatures that could handle that amount of lead at this range and limp away, much less swim away.
Hold the phone there a minute, Torgy.
Pete Ward fished in the water near his live box with a landing net. He brought up a large piece of a snapping turtle's carapace. My guess would be upper and side shell from over the right front leg. It was grisly, and if I had my best guess, it would ultimately prove fatal to Jack. It didn't matter how huge and ancient that beast was. He couldn't survive three blasts from a .357. After strapping the holster over my pistol, I helped Pete land his Seamade, texted Mac to put to shore and head back to the agency, and I shook off the adrenaline hangover from what had just transpired. I had a quick word with Pete. Pete, I think you've seen the last of Jack. I swear he took one to the neck, and at least two relieved him of part of his shell. There was blood in the water as he dove. Rebuild that box and build it strong. My guess is you won't have trouble with the Ripper again.
A good day's work, Torgy, and a good day's shooting. Say, by the way, it looks like one of your shots busted the framing on the dock. You see it over there at the L section at the end? Yeah, there's a chuck missing in the frame near the water. You see it?
Good old Pete. Always trying to figure out how to get something for nothing. I told Ward to contact Captain Martinez if he was serious, and I thanked him again for his volunteer work on the water. Maybe that would score him some agency-funded dock repair. With a last clearing breath and a shake of my neck and shoulders, I got back in the truck and turned it over. Let's hope that was the last of Jack. I filled my coffee mug and looked at Captain Martinez as he thanked me for a good 3 days' work. As far as we could tell, that was the end of Jack the Ripper. The word was already out at the gas stations and the tackle shops. Kids at cabins and resorts were fearlessly jumping off floating docks all around the region. Anglers rejoiced. A new day had dawned.
When you told me you were going to bring out the heavy artillery, Torgy, I did a double take. I know you, Torgy, and that gave me the green light on this thing. I knew you'd have the river clear, and I knew your aim was true. You're sure you hit him, right?
No ricochets, Skip. To me, that means hits. You know what the exit wound of a .357 slug looks like? I can't believe Jack survived my salvo.
Well, let's assume the Ripper dove and then met his end in the deep channel of the Gull. We'll save that hunk of turtle shell as our proof when the rumors start. Let's not kid ourselves, Torgy. No body, no proof. The rumor mill will start to turn. You know the locals.
And I know my pistol. I know my abilities. With a heavy carapace like that, Jack wouldn't float to the surface. He'd sink like a stone and meet his end on the river bottoms. No, Skip. Now Jack is down there at the bottom with his old pals, the Bullheads, and the Eel Pout.
Well, you know what that means for me, right, Torgy?
What's that, Skip?
Now you've got nothing to fear when you help me take my dock out this fall.
Skip.
Join us for the next exciting episode of Real Adventures of the Cabin Country Outdoors Agency, right here on Cabin Country. This is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents either are products of the author's imagination or are used fictitiously. Any resemblance to actual events or locales or persons, living or dead, is entirely coincidental.
So, you do have a long history here of being in the great outdoors and cabin country, and we couldn't be more appreciative of that. What is one thing, John, that you would consider an absolute non-negotiable when you go out into the wilds? What do you have to have with you? What's the one thing? It's an absolute has to come with John Munson. It's a camping trip. This has to be with me.
Well, definitely coffee.
Yes.
Awesome.
Yes. Yes, without a doubt. The stronger, the better.
You know what? I'll tell you. I think I did learn this because I did a solo trip this fall. And I think I learned something, mm-hmm. which is that the thing that I want to have with me on my camping trip is a companion.
Okay. Yeah.
I like to have a companion, somebody that I can share the experience with. I think right. that's, and there's a number of great camping companions that I've had over the years. Mm-hmm. And I really thought I wanted to do this solo trip. I was really excited to do it. I was very set on doing it. Mm-hmm. And after this last trip, I was like, I never need to do that again. That's not right. That's not the critical component for me. Isn't the solitude. Right. I can get as much solitude as I want with the right companion, to be honest.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
But the thing that I really want is I want the moment at the end of the day to sit and look into the fire with a good companion by my side who knows mm-hmm. when to speak and when not to speak.
Right, right. A good friend of mine was an aficionado of the solo jaunts in the Boundary Waters and loved it, lived for it. And it was, you know, his kids are kind of grown up now and the whole bit. And he did one a while back. And I remember him telling me about it. Two things. The companion was missing. You couldn't share experiences through conversation. That was missing. And then on top of that, it was about 45 degrees and raining. And he started realizing, and he's trained in mountain rescue, so he knows what he's talking about when he said, man, I was starting to, you know, I wrapped up and got in my tent and realized it's night one here and I'm kind of losing feeling in my hands and my feet, and this isn't all it was cracked up to be. You know, it might be better if I was with people.
The Boundary Waters are amazing, but they can chase you out of there too. I've been chased off the lakes by weather with people and without people. The last trip that I did up there was similar. It was like, okay, my sleeping bag is sufficiently warm that I know I'm not gonna become hypothermic, but is that really, is that a peak experience, just knowing that I'm not going to freeze to death?
I'm not going to freeze to death tonight.
It's not.
Yeah.
It's windy, and it's not the experience that I was hoping to have,
right,
you know?
Right.
I want a person. But if we're talking about a thing that I like to have with me.
Actual piece of equipment. The coffee is huge. Coffee, a good camp coffee pot is immeasurable. But
it's crucial. It's the whole reason. It's why we get out of the tent. And
that's right. That's right. That's right.
You know, my Winona canoe. I think that's really that's the shit for me. That's what makes it all possible.
Okay.
That's like the deal for me. I've just got to have that canoe because it makes it possible to go far mm-hmm. and to get a lot done in a day. I just love that canoe so much. It was the first thing I bought when a check came from the record company.
Okay.
When it was like, we actually made a few bucks.
Yeah.
It was like 1990, you know, it was probably 1997 or 98, okay. something like that. It was like, I've got like a little bit of disposable income for once in my freaking life. I'm going to get a Winona canoe. And I've still have that canoe, and I love that canoe. Yeah. I'm having to do repairs and stuff on it now. Okay. The wooden gunnels have kind of rotted out on it because I stored it poorly one year. But that's my little baby. That's my that's my passport.
Well, and I'll show my naivete here with canoes. And Winona, are we talking a woody? Is this
a
fiberglass?
It's a Kevlar canoe.
Oh,
It's the Minnesota II Kevlar canoe. It's just like it's the way that I can. It's a way that I can get down the Portage trails with ease, you know, and comfort.
Lightweight. Right.
Yeah. Very lightweight. Well,
my son and daughter both talked about those Widgie trips, and if you were, you were lucky enough to take out one of the old Woodies, that was kind of a mark of honor.
Right.
And on top of that,
I know those things. I've got a canoe that I'm rebuilding actually, which is a thin old wooden canvas one.
Yeah.
And I'm very excited about the day that I'm to get to paddle it around, but I'm not very excited about the day I take it down the trail.
Well, that's just it. Yeah.
They
both said, man, those things, they gain weight as you canoe. You know, they're soaking up the water.
Right.
Which makes it even better. But, oh, boy, getting that on your shoulders and then trying to, you know, my son at the time was like 13 and probably weighed 110 pounds soaking wet. And he's trying to single heft that thing onto his shoulders and actually
That's
came home
job.
with a Well, he came home with a real beautiful egg on his shin from going down on one of those rocky, you know, portage trails, and then a knot on his head where one end of that canoe kind of slid back and just brained him. You know, he's like, oh, and his fellow tripmates were like, are you okay? Oh, man, we'll take it next time. He's like, no, I'm good, I'm good. You know, Dad, I was seeing stars, man. There were like two of everything, but I couldn't let him know, you know. Yeah. It's okay. Be comfortable in your skin, and you don't have to be the macho man savage here. You know, it's totally all right. I've got one last here that I think might, unless you thought of something. I feel like I'm totally.
Oh no, that's all right. I was going to bring it back to why you choose to live in Minnesota. Here's
that's a good question.
A guy who's met with a lot of
the
success.
Land of L'Etoile du Nord. What is it that keeps you?
Yeah. Well, obviously. It's not always the climate, although I really do love experiencing four seasons. I really do. I don't like falling on the ice.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't always necessarily love shoveling, but I love the sound of snow creaking underneath my boots. Mm-hmm. I love being able to go cross country skiing out the back door.
Sure.
I don't always love the mosquitoes, in the summertime, but I do love being able to go up and like lay on my back in a lake and the cold lake and the silence and watch the northern lights.
Absolutely.
Minnesota is an amazing, amazing place. And, it aligns for me in just a lot of different ways. I feel like there's something about the people here that I really resonate with. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's a sincerity about people here and a little bit of a goofiness about people here. We did a show with Joel, where Joel Hodgson came and he came out and played the theme song to Mystery Science Theater 3000 with Charlie Erickson, who originated the song.
Right.
And he was talking about Mystery Science Theater 3000. He said, you know, the show was such a weird success, and it couldn't have happened anywhere but here. It never would have caught fire any place else.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I feel like that's true of a lot of the different musical enterprises and things that I've been involved with in my life.
Sure.
Is that I don't know that they would have necessarily been a success in other places, but there's like something about the people here that nurtured me as an artist and nurtured a lot of interesting art. And it's not like I need to be here to connect with that, but I just that's me. This place is me. It's who I am. I've considered living in other places. There's certainly beautiful, many, many beautiful places that I've been that I've loved, but I always, after traveling to those places, I always loved coming back home here.
Right.
And this is home for me.
Right.
So why do you leave home? I don't know. I didn't ever want to badly enough.
Sure. You tapped into your love for the place with some of your songwriting. I mean, Fudd, you were listening to Snow Day again today and kind of going,
oh yeah,
man. I mean, you can't, this is just, you know, the penultimate piece and that's a real
Minnesota experience Matt Wilson wrote that song, gave it to me to sing, which was an incredible gift. I mean it's not like it only happens in Minnesota, but it definitely happens here.
Oh, man.
And that's a thing people here really understand.
It's coming down. Snow paints on the motor vanes, keeps your business on the ground. It's coming down. Slow day for the teacher, and her wheels are spinning now.
Oh. you grew up as a kid in Minnesota. I mean, it, sadly now, I'm a public educator, and we've just decided now with distance learning and everything we're doing, well, snow days are a thing of the past, because now you know how right. to teach from home.
Yeah.
And I was just like, man, and I'm starting to hear the piano start in and the bass line, and like, well, we can still remember through music, you know, the wonders of it's yeah. flashing yeah. across the bottom of the TV screen, man. Your district has been canceled, you know, like yeah. what a gift.
We'll see what happens. I keep wondering what the lessons are that we learned from this.
Oh, man, it's going to be strange.
I don't think one of the lessons that we learn is going to be that kids need to only be educated remotely.
I don't think so. Right. No. I don't think so. And we just sent a bunch of them home, man, and they were doing so well in person. You know, I mean, that you can't. That human connection, like you said, you know, what do you want on that trip, on, you know, in the Boundary Waters, a good companion? And that's every walk of the human experience. You know, we got to be, we're social animals. We got to be with people.
Oh, yeah, it's so crucial. I mean, yeah. in this world of streaming performances and things right. like that, too, right. it's heartbreaking for me. I see these streaming performances and I'm just like, it makes me weep. With what I'm missing, you know, yeah, which yeah. is that everybody around me seeing that happen, you know.
Right. Well, and feeding off a live crowd that's just totally into it's got to be a missed, you know, quotient that is just like, man.
Oh, yes, for the performer, but for even more so, I think, for the audience.
Audience,
member,
yeah. You know? Yeah. I mean, I keep getting the band is in town updates of like, hey, this band's streaming and this band's streaming. I'm so sick of being on computers right now. I'm like,
right, yeah.
I don't care.
Hard to sit down.
I've got Spotify. I don't care. I mean, come on. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I want to see them and I'd like to kick into the help them, you know. I mean, what a loss of revenue and everything to just be kind of crass commercial for a second, but it's a real deal. I mean, it's just, it's so many
oh, yeah.
people
it's,
have been
it's
so,
brutal. It's
so
brutal.
Harshly affected by this. Now, you love the North Star State, the land of 10,000 plus lakes. You've lived here your whole life. It's home to you. And I'm not asking for song titles from your past, but what do you, just in the body of music that's just out there, that massive library compendium of all the songs ever written, what two songs seem to sum up Minnesota for you? They don't have to be yours, obviously. It's you know, I mean, that would be cool too. But it's everybody's got their Minnesota songs. Are there a couple where you're like, yeah, that kind of says it, you know? About
well, I mean, I guess I'll speak a little bit to my past. That yeah. I think Music for Boys is something, which is by the Suburbs. There's
yep.
something
yep.
about that song that feels quintessentially Minnesotan to me because of that
yeah.
the whole nutty kind of like
right.
camp
yeah.
life
trains are coming
yeah it's he's really I feel like Jan really nailed that
yeah.
And let's see, I mean, I really it's maybe strikes anybody as a little bit hokum, but Skyway, I feel like is
sure.
a
yeah.
is a quintessentially it's a real Minnesotan.
Yeah,
that's people say Skyway, they think of it as a metaphor, and it's like, no, that's a real thing.
Yeah.
That's
weird. Yeah.
It's like the habit trails over the roads.
Absolutely,
so cold.
It's funny you hit the Replacements in the sub. For me, the soundtrack of my junior and senior year in high school was Credit in Heaven. That was it. You know, it was like, wow, that two album set was like.
I just love that too.
Oh God, it's unbelievable, and then. Everything Trip Shakespeare, you know, Semisonic. It was such cool stuff, you know. And
oh,
so,
thank you.
So much. Oh, it was unbelievable.
To, I mean, to be in the mix with those artists is a thrill.
I don't mean to disparage Gordon Lightfoot, but I'm really glad you didn't say The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Well, I'll tell you, one other song and artist that I love that comes to mind, too, is the song Uptown by Prince.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because I do feel like Chan and Paul both wrote songs about what was, and Prince wrote a song about what he dreamed the city could be, what the experience
right.
of being in Minneapolis could be. I
sure.
really do feel like that's his vision was, it was a different kind of artist, you know, but
right.
his vision
right.
was maybe even bigger than Chan's and Paul's.
That was a great, all the shows were wonderful, the holiday specials with the new standards, but the how you ended the one with the big blowout controversy. That was a ton of fun, you know.
That was a fun. That was very fun to play.
I won't lie. I was a massive Bowie fan, and still am, always will be. And when you had Gary Louris come out and play Starman, it was like, man, I think I'm going to start crying right here in the middle of this road. My wife's going to be embarrassed or pat me on the back. I'm not sure. What a great night.
Right.
I mean, and Messerschmitt doing the piece from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. And it was just such a, I mean, they've all been wonderful shows, but those really stand out to me. It was so cool.
And everyone's got their favorites. It's breaking our hearts not to do that show this year. We really gave it the old college try, and then we just couldn't figure out a way to do it and honor what the tradition of the show, basically,
right.
You know,
keeping everybody safe.
Yeah, exactly. That was the most kind of crucial component. It was like, how are we going to keep our musicians safe?
Right.
I will tell you this: the New Standards have made an amazing holiday show album.
Okay.
Oh, excellent.
And so if you want to direct people to our website, it's going to be up for sale there. I would really encourage people to get it because it's amazing. It's great stuff.
At Christmas time next year.
We could sit here and talk music with you all night long. We're both music fanatics, the whole piece. But bring her back to Cabin Country. You love camping. You've bestowed that love upon your kids. You've done, I'm guessing, a fair piece of outdoors time with the whole family. What is the Munson family favorite fireside campsite dinner? What is it that you have? It's kind of
okay,
gotta
well,
happen.
Not, now, my wife... Penny has, she is a master trail chef.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Unbelievable.
Wow.
She's an amazing cook every night. Every single night of my life is like a feast. And honestly, she's amazing. It's been awesome to be the recipient of her gifts in the kitchen. But on the trail, she's equally as good.
Wow.
And this last trip that we did up into the Boundary Waters this summer, she has perfected making kind of flat breads. So she makes like a naan, like Indian naan, and these kind of curry dishes.
Yeah.
And so it's like chapati, naan, and then the last trip that we did, she made pizza.
Okay.
And made kind of like, she kind of like got an oven going in the fire grate out on an island in the middle of the Boundary Waters.
Wow.
And we had pizzas that were like something you'd get at Punch or something.
Wow. Lola.
It was amazing. So for me, I guess, you know, speaking of companions, I don't want to go on the trail without companions. That's the magic ingredient for making the trips work for me.
Right.
And now no trip will ever, any long trip is going to include pizza for sure.
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
I'll bet.
To have pizza on the trail.
I'll bet.
And I know a lot of grinders are out there. They're like, what are you doing not just having Chef Boyardee noodles? Why would you weigh yourself down with all that crap?
Right.
But she's got it dialed, man. The food pack, it's like, it's never that heavy. She only brings exactly what she needs, you know? And to make these flatbreads and stuff, basically it's just flour and water, you know?
Right.
So it's awesome.
That's impressive.
Wonderful. How to
that's
eat
impressive.
Well on the trail with as few ingredients as needed, and yet still magic happens. And you don't have to, like, you hear those horror stories out of Minojin and Widgie of, like, well, the bears and weather took all our gear, and so it was just days of lard mixed with brown sugar, you know? And thank God that's not the case, right?
Whatever the bear didn't want.
Exactly. I think I'm eating a deodorant. I'm not sure.
Mouth-watering.
Wow. But at least it's filling, and incredibly drying. Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful. We always have to ask this last question of every guest because Fudd and I are both kind of the outliers in our families. As the, in my family, I'm the only one, and Fudd, I think in yours, you're the only one.
Yeah,
we're actually part of that like 3% from the great state of Minnesota that doesn't actually like s'mores. Where are you at, John, with s'mores? And, it's, and there's no wrong answer. I mean, you
it's got to be the right time.
Yeah,
I'm not like looking forward to s'mores night. That's not like right. the, that's right. not the reason yeah. to go for me.
Yeah.
But I kind of lost my interest in like just super sweet stuff. Yeah. That is just like yeah. it's the sweetest. I love seeing my kids eat them.
Yeah,
I love Enjoy. That.
And being around the fire and socializing.
I probably have one a year.
Yeah. Yeah. I've actually gotten to the point where at our favorite location for s'mores night, I'll bring down my six string and just start playing music. And people will say, hey, I made you a s'more. We're going to share. It's here you go.
Oh,
and I'm like,
no.
Hey, thank you so much. But, you know, this guild, I just can't get the, no, you know, thank you so much. But I just, yeah, you know, I want to be around the people and you enjoy the molten chocolate and the scorched. I don't know, man. You know, I mean, I get it, and people love them, and I totally understand it. I'm actually the guy that, like, steals a Hershey bar and just kind of mows on the thing while nobody's looking, and then...
See, starts... now, you steal the Hershey bar, and I'll steal the graham cracker.
There we go. Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, hey, John, thank you so much for what a wonderful yeah. interview. I mean, you covered so many great things, and the consummate storyteller. And took time out of your night, and we really appreciate
pleasure,
it.
My pleasure, guys. I
really
enjoyed
appreciate
it.
It.
Bjorn, Fudd, you're a wonderful host.
Appreciate it, man. Appreciate it. And, you know, I mean, the website, maybe we'll throw up a picture, too, of, like, there's the rock god himself back in the days of the long hair with the, you know, maybe they're doing the slacks.
Let's not forget those moments.
Oh, yeah. It was key. The brothers Wilson with the necklaces swinging around and the whole bit. And I got to tell you, as an aficionado and with one of the old Shakespeare fanatics, I would sail every Memorial Day in the Apostles with a group of teachers. And one of the guys I teach with actively followed you guys around. Right? I mean, wherever you were playing, he and his crew from St. Thomas and the U, they were all there. And at one point, I just had a bunch of mixes, the great days of mixed CDs, you know. Mixtapes are
right.
sadly gone now, so we're doing mixed CDs, and now it's just playlists, of course. But I had Late on there, and you were doing some of that great Munson falsetto, you know. and he was at the wheel and just went kind of comatose for a second. And we got a big gust of wind, and you hit the end of it. And he just shouted, John Munson, ladies and gentlemen, and everybody started clapping. It's like, yay. Oh my God, it was perfect. It was perfect.
Awesome.
So excellent.
That's sweet to think of that, man. Singing out over the Apostles.
Oh yeah, we were that's cranking sweet. The Harman Kardon speakers, you know, out over the Apostles. There was Late. Yeah,
excellent. Awesome.
Beautiful
awesome.
Stuff.
That's funny. That really is one for the aficionados. You know, that's not like that's not Toolmaster of Brainerd. You don't get him calling out for Late too often.
I'd have always been the guy yelling Vines. Let's hear Vines, because again, you get to showcase those booming pipes. Beautiful stuff. But hey, we'll let you back to your night. And thank right. you so much for joining us on Cabin Country, John. It was outstanding.
Thanks
so,
a lot.
Right on,
really
guys.
Appreciate
Take care.
It. Well, we'd like to thank again John Munson for a wonderful show tonight, Fudd. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Great interviews. And we'd also like to offer our thanks again to John Munson, the musician. All music used tonight on this episode of Cabin Country was green-lighted by the musician himself. We got the permission of John to go ahead and use some of that great music. We
yes,
really
sir.
Appreciate it.
We'd also like to thank Chan Poling for the use of the Suburbs song, Music for Boys. And Joel Hodgson for the Mystery Science Theater 3000 theme by Charlie Erickson. And we strongly encourage you to check out the New Standards. You can find them easily online or on their website, thenewstandards.com, and see clips of their shows, including the holiday show. Amazing stuff. And if you like old, familiar rock tunes reinterpreted by a jazz trio, you'll really like their stuff. So I encourage you to check it out. So with that, I think it's time to bring things to a close. Looking forward to our next episode. So we'll have plenty of coffee for you and an extra dock chair. So please join us, and we'll just listen again for that shutting cabin door.
Shutting of the screen door. We'll see you next time on Cabin Country.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.